from our Greater Los Angeles chapter leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Okay, if everyone would please stand. Our virtual flag, I believe it's virtual, is going to, if you're facing the front, it's going to be slightly to your left. And please repeat, hold your hand over your heart and repeat after me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. And now our other host chapter president from the San Gabriel Valley chapter, Pamela Apology, will present the invocation. And Pam, if you want this microphone.
Okay.
It's just right, come right here. Yeah.
Dear Heavenly Father, we come before you now, Lord Jesus, with humble... with humble and contrite hearts. And we just ask you to be with us, assist us in achieving all the goals that we set out to achieve. Help us all to have a lucrative, healthy, and safe convention, a convention of camaraderie, convention of accomplishments, a convention of knowledge and learning. And we thank you in advance, Lord, for allowing all these things to occur. And we ask you to bless those who could not be with us. And we just ask you these things and thank you in advance, Lord Jesus, in your precious and holy name. Amen.
Thank you so much, Pam. Okay. We have a partnership that we've are working on with a company called ERA. You know, the ERA. I hope all of you are going to get to their booth. And we have Amy Bernal with ERA. She's the Director of Agent Services. And she's going to speak to us for about 5 minutes.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys all for having me here today and for having Ira. So we are upstairs, and we're not inside the exhibit hall. So if you want to try Ira, we are happy to get a pair of glasses on and you can connect to an agent and explore the hotel. So upstairs, before you would turn left to go into the exhibit hall, there's three tables on the right-hand side. We're on the very first table that you'll encounter on the right-hand side. And essentially, Ira is a pair of smart glasses that you have a live video stream that connects you to a real person that is trained on some basic orientation and mobility terminology, as well as how to provide effective and objective description. So our goal as a company is to provide immediate access to information at the user's request. So we want you to have information on your terms, and that looks different to every user of what they want to do with Ira. So a lot of our users call when they're in a place where they don't know a normal travel route, or something is changed in their travel route, like construction or change in the transportation schedule. So they'll call an agent and say, hey, I need to find the nearest bus stop. Can you help me get there? And the agent will pull up that map, and they can see where you're moving along the map through GPS from the glasses. So they have that live video stream. They're able to see what you're seeing in real time without any delay. They're also able to see where you're located and where you're moving. So a lot of other at-home tasks, reading the mail, figuring out something on your computer if the screen reader is just not figuring it out, they're happy to take a peek and help troubleshoot what's going on your computer. Also, grocery shopping, clothes shopping, getting off the airplane and going to your next terminal, we're there for anything you need. Our current hours are 4 a.m. to 10 p.m. here on the West Coast, so that is the hours we're open as a service. So come upstairs and give us a try. We'd love to hear your feedback, and we're happy to answer all of your questions upstairs. So thank you so much for inviting us and having us here, and we're excited for what the partnership will bring. Thank you.
Yay. Okay, I also want to welcome all of those listening to us on ACB Radio. Yay! Okay, be careful what you wish for. Do you know how often I have sat where you're sitting and said, "What a boring presidential speech. Why don't they get on with it? Why do they have to thank everybody?" So here I am getting ready to thank a bunch of folks. I now understand why it's so necessary. And I want to begin, of course, by thanking our sponsors. Yay, our sponsors. Our gold sponsors are Sprint and Wells Fargo. Our silver sponsors are Rosenbeam, Galvin, and Grunfeld, LLP. They help us with a lot of our lawsuits. Vanda Pharmaceuticals is back this year. And we have, yay, and we have bronze sponsors. We have Goldstein, Bordine, Dardarian, and Ho. I think you recognize one of those names, as well as Laney Feingold. And we also have Humanware and Togo's, who are providing all the lunches for the young folks coming in for this mini conference tomorrow. Yes. I would like to thank our convention planning committee under the able leadership of Jeff Tom. He's done many, many convention assignments, but this was his first year chairing the convention committee. Yes, let's hear it for that committee. Some troublemakers. Got to keep kin in line. We want to thank our streaming team, and that's Gabe and Andrea and John and Steve Aminoff, and I'm probably forgetting somebody, but what? Ken, yeah. So thanks to the streamers. And to our amazing volunteers. And you know, generally we have wonderful experiences wherever we go, but I'm finding this hotel staff just amazingly nice. I use my executive committee maybe more than other presidents. I have not done so lately, but I will in the future. And I want to thank all six of us, five besides me. I want to thank Gabe particularly, doesn't Gabe do a nice job of putting out that connection? Week in, week out, year in, year out, Gabe is up late on Thursday night getting that connection ready to go. And what would we do without our money man, Peter, who is running all over the place here, managing the exhibits, the Abby Schumann exhibit room. And we want you all to visit the Abby Schumann Memorial exhibit room. The board passed a resolution that for the next 5 years, that will be the name that our exhibit room bears. I also want to thank particularly our this board who isn't going to work hard. We're going to step up the level of participation from our board members. They already, some of them do a great deal, but everybody on this board is going to get their elbows, sleeves rolled up, and pitch in. And of course, our amazing committees. We have so many wonderful committees, since I've been ex officio member serving on most of them for this past 9 months, I have been even more astonished at what works our committees do. Let's give our committees a big hand. And they gave their report last night, but I can't not thank again Donna Pomerantz and Debbie Cordero for their amazing work on the Mutt Strut. Especially these last few years. This year, we had more profit, $16,000, than we ever have before. And I want to tell you about the top three people who raise money, not to, you know, to single them out, but to show you what just ordinary members can do. 35 people raised money, but Louis Herrera and Hugo brought in $2,500. And we have to... Louis and Hugo kind of snuck out of, you know, at the end he got an amazing matching sponsorships from his place of employment. I was all set to buy Carly's tiara, but we came in second, and we raised a little over $2,000. And Denise Sevilla raised about $1,500. She was the top dog. Her dog Flower was the top dog last year. So you see what the top three were able to do, and that we're just ordinary people. So we're going to change our fundraising tactic. We won't be doing a Mutt Strut again, but we will be doing different kinds of fundraising efforts. I also want to thank Jennifer Caldera, our amazing office assistant, and Paul Shane. I learn and grow every day being with Paul. And you'll be hearing from Paul throughout the convention, as we heard him at the board meeting last night, at the fundraising committee yesterday afternoon, and at the leadership dinner tonight. Remember, that's in Trillium C. There is no such place as Fitzgerald's. We will be hearing Paul's report to the convention tomorrow afternoon. And last but not least, I want to thank the chair of our advocacy committee, my sweetie, Steve Mendelson, without whom I really couldn't do this job, and to whom I will have been married 25 years on Monday. Okay, well, my presidency began quietly enough. I was delegate to ACB in Minneapolis, and that was really nice. But I got to tell you, the last 9 months have been a real roller coaster. You know, and because of extraordinary challenges that we face, my presidency will forever be linked to the implications and consequences of hiring our CEO, Paul Shane. To understand our accomplishments, we have to think about our challenges. First and the most imperative challenge is our precarious financial situation. And that is the first thing we have to remedy. And so most of the accomplishments I'm going to mention are along the lines of what we've been doing and what we hope to do. We've had a number of consequences so far. Perhaps the most important of all is the case for support. And we need to think of a case for support as why anybody should support us. We didn't have such a document. You know, we would ask, oh, well, gosh, when did we pass the White Cane Law? And what did we, what bills did we sponsor a few years ago? So we definitely have had quite a time pulling together statistics and stories and data that would help us create this case for support. This will be an evolving document over time. You will be able to get a copy if you'd like one. We're going to get our Braille. We do have our Braille printer. It's got a glitch at the moment, but we'll get it up. And we only got it like a week ago, and we just couldn't get it working quite in time for the convention. But we'll be presenting people now much more opportunity to get stuff in Braille. Yay. We did a fundraiser at Tommy T's, and anybody at the board meeting last night has already heard this. And we may never do this kind of thing again. But the point is, we're launching a lot of different activities, and we'll tinker and we'll evolve and we'll grow in our fundraising efforts. More efforts at Easy Money have been our fundraisers, say, last night, Wednesday night at BJ's. So many came down. We're so happy you came. And the restaurant was terrific. They had the... they had the flyers sitting at the front counter, and Steve's cousin, who's a fundraiser, went to the back, and she said, bring out those old flyers that you've already used and put them back out front so people can grab. I think that's hilarious. Like our Amazon Smile effort, please, we're going to promote this even more, but we need you to sign up with what's called Amazon Smile. We've put links in the connection, and you know, we'll put them on the president's list again and stuff. And if you sign up for that, 0.5% of everything you, or most things you buy, we get a half of that, a percent of that. Doesn't seem like a lot of money, but if you know, if we can get thousands of people, your friends, your communities, to sign up with a smile, it's just a click. And if they decide after a year they want to change to a different charity, we hope they won't, but they can. We're involved. Paul reported last night that our grant writer has just submitted an operations grant, and that's what we desperately need. We need operations funding. And so we've submitted that grant. We made the first cut on a grant for educating people about financial matters. There were going to be only 30 positions in the whole country, and we made the first cut. We haven't heard anything since. But it just shows you what we're doing. And a lot of these grants are so we can have a track record. You know, once you've got one or two, it's like anything else. So many people will give you a grant if you've already got one. Paul is working on a VISTA grant to use VISTA volunteers to help some of our communities bring along some issues and help college students and help some of our people in the middle age category. We also have partnerships like the one that we talked about last night with Patrick Netter. We haven't got an official partnership with him and his Move product. We do have a partnership with I'm blanking. The one that was just here. Ira. Yes. And go and look at that device. But tell them they've got to get some cheaper plans so that we more of us can take advantage of it. We've good. Thank you. We've had some failures, but we've had a lot of successes. We're systemizing and modernizing our management structure. Now, how does that sound for something to put people asleep? We want the organization that always kind of went by the seat of its pants before. We want to have more formal things like what gift acceptance policies we might have, for instance. We're moving toward implementing strategies for that have huge implications in terms of our finances, our accounting systems, because really our organization has been run more like a family than a 21st century modern nonprofit. Now, I want to come back to talk about this case for support. The case for support showed that we desperately need statistics, and we need your help in getting those. We estimated the volunteer hours for, wait, just hold your hats, volunteer hours for 2016, something like 144,000 volunteer hours, which at $23 an hour comes to $952,000, nearly $1 million. So we really are asking, we know it's a pain to keep track of all these report forms. And I mean, you're attending this convention, so when you go home, you figure out, tell your chapters how much time you spent here. You can count that. We need to help get better reporting by all of us, and that includes your president. I've not been as good as I can be at keeping track of the officers' volunteer time and so forth. Other accomplishments, we are moving toward a new website. We've hired Erlene Hughes as our design person to help us move to the Drupal system. Finally, after several years, just think of it, in a few months, we'll be able to do online fundraising. You'll be able to fill out your registration packets. You'll be able to fill out the scholarship applications. And we'll be able to put documents up behind a wall so that only members can see them, like our minutes. Finally, as soon as our wonderful secretary, and doesn't she do a good job? Let's hear it for artists. We want to get those things up so that our members can have that information, all the while not leaving behind our non-computer using people. Those are important parts of our community. As I say, we're also working on accounting and financial systems to make our record keeping more transparent. I mean, we aren't always going to have Peter to do all the amazing things that Peter does. And so while we do have Peter as our treasurer, we need to get some other systems in place. Our advocacy efforts, we're working on legislation this year. We have no bills this year, but we're opposing opposing some and supporting others. And that's under Jeff's able leadership. I don't know what we would do without Jeff at the legislature for us. And Margie Donovan, who worked so hard last year for our guide dog bills. Amazing. We have some ongoing legal efforts. We're very close to a settlement with the AMC theaters so that when you go to the movies, you'll actually be able to get the right audio on your earphones, and they'll actually know how to tell you how to use them, and they will have been tested. So that's good news. We're working with Airbnb. They are so cooperative and want to get their access for our service animals. They want to get it right. And we'll be hearing from Kara Jansen tomorrow for a few minutes. They are one of our silver sponsors. And so she'll be talking with us about that case. We have a couple of voting cases in Alameda County, one in San Mateo. And I want to particularly thank Noel Runyon. I don't know what we would do without Noel. We have a resolution coming up about modernizing our Constitution to meet our administrative and legal needs of today while retaining the values of our history. And the scholarships are underway. Christy made an announcement last night. They're due by the 15th of May. Please tell everybody you know that the scholarship applications are up. We have streamlined some of the events at the convention, some not so successfully as others. But I think we have the largest attendance that we've had in a long time. And this is very exciting this year. Be sure to visit the Abby Schumann exhibit room to see what our vendors have got for you. In the area of outreach and communication, we have our monthly president's calls, and I know it's not easy to make that commitment, but as we move into the next year, as we move forward, it'll become so automatic that we'll never remember we didn't have monthly president's calls. It's hard to get used to at first. There are my monthly MP3 file messages that I hope are being played at some of the chapters. And both Paul and I hold office hours from time to time so members can call us. More accomplishments. And these are not monetary, but we cleaned up the office of decades of files, and I swear Paul said we had thousands of old Mudstra t-shirts. But the office needed cleaning out and dusting out, and somebody found a half a bottle of bourbon in some file cabinet. also we're also speaking of the office. We are looking to move at the beginning of November, and we're in the process of looking at spaces for the offices. And you, if you were at the board meeting, you heard an update about that. We also updated our computers and the chairs. Our poor staff didn't have decent chairs to sit on. As I say, we have a new Braille printer. And I would be remiss, though, if I didn't say we've made a lot of mistakes and had a number of missteps. This convention pre-registration got a bit ragged. We know calls are not returned or acknowledged in a timely way. We are going to have board members assigned to work with a certain number of chapters. Each board member will have chapters to work with. And if you're in that board member's catchment area, you have any trouble getting through to the office and your call isn't returned in a day or so, you need to let us know. We need to get feedback on what isn't working. We are working hard on all these, improving the things that we've made so many mistakes, and we have made a lot. But, you know, when you got, as I've said, 1,000 plates in the air, 100 are bound to break, you know. But with your patience, it will get better. The danger, though, of having a CEO is the tendency to let the office do it. You know, let them take it, take advantage of the office. But you know what? Grassroots? Where are grassroots? They're at the bottom of the grass. And that means us. As the oldest grassroots advocacy organization representing the blind themselves, we have a responsibility as we move into year 83 to improve the lives of our members, of all the blind of California, like the woman who called me last week and told me a neighbor of hers was telling her she shouldn't be on the sidewalk. She was going to get herself killed. These things are still happening. We are one of the largest and strongest ACB affiliates. We must show the way, be a model of how to lead into the future. As we move forward, hey, I stop for applause. As we move forward, as we do what Paul calls the mission money dance, we must never forget, while chasing the money, our mission. While I sit in this chair, I pledge, though we will be doing everything we can to raise money, we will never forget our mission to improve the lives of all blind or visually impaired Californians. Thank you. Carly liked it too. Okay, I lost my place. Just a second. Oh, now we're ready for the nominating report, Pam. Guess you're going to have to come back up here. Then I'm just going to tell you a little bit. Then we're going to have a gold sponsor presentation from Sprint. And then we will have our nominating, we'll have our candidates hour, as much of it as we can get in. Is Kelly Egan in the room? Is Kelly Egan here? No. Okay. Pam, do you have a mic? Come on, staff. Come down and use this one then, Pam. I'm sorry. Can we get that one on? I don't want this to happen. I want our mics to work.
Okay.
Hi.
Can you hear me now? Thank you. Would you like me to go ahead, Judy?
Please, Pam, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, you didn't. Okay, so I'm going to present to you the slate that was brought forth last night via my wonderful nominating committee, who not only arrived on time, but arrived early. And they were spectacular. So we have the offices of second vice president, of secretary, and five board positions. So I'm going to give you the names that have been brought forth for each. Second vice president is Gabe Griffith. Secretary is Artis Bazin. And then the officers are Sarah Harris, Linda Perrell, Pamela Metz, Robert Wendt, and Vivian Younger. And I thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Hard-working committee there. Now it gives me great pleasure to introduce Kelly Egan, who's representing Sprint, who is one of our gold sponsors. You're going to find out Kelly is the coolest lady, and she has her guide dog, Hope, and that makes her even cooler. And she's got so many things to share about the great team she's got working for folks who are visually impaired. And I'm going to turn the mic over to Kelly. Give her a big hand and thanks, Sprint.
I'm going to move this mic down to you.
All right.
Okay, come in your... Okay.
Can you see? Me neither. All right.
Can you use this one?
Is it right here?
Okay, good.
All right, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
All right. Hi, everybody. Some of you know me. Some of you have seen me here, seen me at the ACB, seen me at CSUN, seen me all over the place. Anyway, we are here. I'm here with Sprint. Sprint brought me on board a couple years ago to make sure that we are providing good services, good accessible devices, affordable plans, and customized customer service to our community. So one of the things I like to do when I'm talking to people is let them know that I have a business card that I'd love to share with you in Braille. And if you have any suggestions or ideas about what Sprint could do better, I'd like to know, because we are looking at various accessible devices constantly and working with the manufacturers of those devices to make sure they're including features. You know, iPhone does a great job of that already, but others we're trying to bring up to speed in many cases. We just introduced a new flip phone, and it's called the Go Flip, and it is sort of smartphone, I would call it. But it has buttons, which a lot of people are interested in, and it also can search the web. And also you can watch movies on it and things like that. So it's not super smart, but it's smart-ish. So if you want that phone that's somewhere in between, sort of a hybrid, we have the Go Flip that just came out a couple weeks ago. So we're pretty excited about that, because we always get questions about, can we get a flip phone? You know, I don't like, you know, the glass screen and so on and so forth. So that's sort of what my whole job is how to integrate Sprint into the blind community and make sure we're offering good service, good support, and good devices. I've recently had the opportunity to hire five new contractors that are working for Sprint throughout the country, doing what I'm doing, basically, and they're all blind and low vision, too. So, woohoo, right? Right on. So I'm very, very honored to be able to bring people on board that support our problems, our challenges, our opportunities as well. So we're just getting started with that, and I have my assistant Ava in the back room, back of the room, that's working at our table too, and she is helping me coordinate all this effort, because it's a bit of coordination that needs to happen at the same time. So that's one of the new things we're doing. We've got the new flip phone. Let's see, what else do we have going on? We're in a new division. Well, we're in a division that's changed its name. It used to be Sprint Relay. And so I work with all deaf and hard of hearing people. I was the first blind person that they brought on. Now, as a matter of fact, we're called Sprint Accessibility. So we're really focused on growing and supporting all disabilities. So blind, deaf, hard of hearing, low vision, cognitive, etc. So we want to make sure we're really reaching out and focusing on universal accessibility for all, because that's the way it should be, right? So that's kind of what Sprint has been up to. I'd love you all to stop by the booth, because we're a little bit lonely when you're not visiting, and look at what we've got going on in terms of pricing and plans, because we are kind of doing a new thing. We have a CEO that I think is a pretty cool guy and really trying to streamline things in the company. So we have now just one plan. What a concept. That there's just one unlimited plan that's cheap. Okay, I like that idea. So you can get on our new plan that's unlimited everything, $50 for the first line, $30 for the second line, and $20 for the lines after that. And guess what? If you're blind or low vision, you get $5 off each of those prices. All right, come on now. It's a good time to be blind. So we've got that going on, and we just want to make sure that everything is consistent, is easy to buy, unlimited is the way of the future. That's the way it's going to be. And we want to be able to support you. So I think we can save you money from those other creeps. And also give you better, good connectivity. We're all kind of the same in connectivity these days because everybody shares all the same towers. So that is kind of the way it goes now. So that's what I have to say. Do you guys have any questions? Okay.
Do we have someone to run the mic? Do we have a mic? Okay.
Please only ask questions I can answer.
I'm Bruce Benefield, and I'm with a phone company that's aged. And I'm the guy that's the medical researcher. And I'm getting tired of the calls not getting through to the laboratories or to the doctors. I'm sick of the excuses they give me. And when I want customer service, I get somebody from the center of the earth who can barely understand English. I'm wondering if I can switch and get away from that ancient company, because I need a phone that's strong and that works. I'm tired of the company that's over 100 years old, because their service is like that. And so I need something that works with the scientist I work with. And if you can help me on that, I'll switch right now.
We can help you with that. Switch to Sprint. We'd be happy about that. Very happy about that. So you don't like the fact that, you can correct me if I didn't get this completely right. You don't like the fact that you have to get support and service from overseas and they can't understand you. Okay, so I'm going to give you a number. I'm just going to say it now, 855-885-7568. You don't have to remember that. You can come by the booth. That number is 855-885-7568. Our booth is in the second floor on the, well, I don't know how to explain it. When you go in the door, it's on the, Ava, help. They are still open. But wait for me. I want to watch.
We have another question over here also.
Yes, go ahead.
I want like to know, is when you had that price
please?
Range
your
that
name.
You're doing, wait, is it only
name.
During this convention, or is it all the time? My name is Laura Russell. The price that you mean, like $5 off this or $5
yes.
that, I like to know, is that just during the convention?
No, that's all the time. And you get free 411.
Hey.
Woohoo, right?
Yeah.
So we're trying to take care of our people.
We have time for one more question.
We have one here.
Madam President, this is Yolanda Escandone. Laura Russell's a very good friend of mine. I know her extremely well, and a lot of the stuff that's been said here is totally not true, including that gentleman who's just left. He doesn't like a lot of stuff. I don't want to go into it, but I need that phone too, please. And Judy, you know I was going to say.
Does someone else seek the floor? I've got a question. One more.
Do we have any other questions? Okay, I'm coming over.
I just had a question on the plans. This is Tanya Williams. If you're already a Sprint customer, can you get under the new plan? Or do you have to be a brand new customer?
We like new customers. And you'd need to come talk at the booth to the guys in retail about that, because I wouldn't want to mislead you. I'm not sure if you can change your plan in the midst of things and get everything realigned, to tell you the truth. So that's why we bring retail to the show, so that they can answer all those technical questions that I don't have all the answers to. But that's a great question.
Okay. Thank you so much, Kelly. We really...
Thank you all very much. We love to be here.
And go buy the Sprint. I'm going to send Steve up there to look at that flip phone.
Hope and I are on our way. We'll try not to trip over a chair this time.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Come on, Hope.
Okay, I wanted to allow as much time as possible for the candidates' debate, as they say. I have arbitrarily decided that what we'll do is each candidate of the five board members who wishes to, will make about a two-minute statement, and I don't have a stopwatch, so you're going to be on the sort of honorary two-minute thing, and then we will accept two questions for those candidates, and then, time permitting, we will talk about add other board members, directors. Whether if we don't get to our vice president and treasurer and secretary, we'll hear from them this evening. Okay, so. We have the five, and I'm going to start alphabetically with Sarah Harris. Sarah, do you have a microphone, or do you? And you all know where you are in the alphabet: Metz, Perel, Wendt, Younger. So get ready. Yeah, you can. If somebody can bring you a mic from where you are, I think it's okay. We aim to please.
You ready, Judy?
I am, Sarah.
All right. Hello, everyone. Those of you who don't know me, my name is Sarah Harris. I'm currently the chapter president for Fresno. Go Fresno. I joined CCB in 2014. And I'll be honest, when I joined, I really didn't know what I was getting into. And then I came to one of these wonderful conventions. And I felt very inspired, and I have continued to be more and more inspired by all of you. Every time that, you know, I talk with anybody, if it's not on the phone, here. I really, really think that we're moving in the right direction, and I want to be a part of that. I want to help the current board and Judy and our new CEO, Paul. I was lucky enough to be part of helping with the case for support, which was a labor of love, and it's beautiful. Those of you who haven't seen it, you know, just wait. We have also been working hard in constitution and bylaws, resolutions. I think we're going to be up all night. and I have been having such a great experience working with the membership committee. Those of you, if it's your first time, come to First Timers. I just really want everyone to know that we're moving in a beautiful direction. It's a fun time to be a part of CCB. And that's all.
Okay. Thank you. A question for Sarah. Does someone have a question for Sarah? Come on. Question for Sarah?
Oh, yeah.
Is someone ready to ask a question? Oh, good. And say your name, please, when you take the mic.
Hi, Kathy Schmidt-Whitaker. And Sarah, I'd like to know, what is your thought in regards to recruiting new members? What types of outreach activities do you feel would be useful for the organization?
Well, Kathy, you're just giving me a nice, easy one, right? I think, number one, we need to look at recruiting, our younger kids. You know, a lot of people don't know about our organization, so I think number one is we need to become more visible, you know, in our own communities and throughout the state. So I think that as we begin to move into the future and we start working with more social media outlets, we will be able to make a difference and continue CCB for many, many years to come.
Thank you, Kathy, for that question. Another question for Sarah?
Yeah, there's a gentleman over here also.
Hi, Sarah. I'm Dave Hendrickson, Bakersfield Chapter Delegate. And I love what you said about the young people. What activities do you think we could use to help bring those young people out other than our business, just our business meeting? Because they get very bored. I have some ideas, but I'd like to know what your idea on that would be.
Activities? Who? Well, you know, I think that our young kids like to be active. I think we need to look into getting some beatball going. I think that would be kind of fun. The other things, you know, it's mainly just getting them more involved and teaching them how they can advocate for themselves. So we could make fun games out of it, almost in a sense. You know, you can go out to the schools and, you know, meet our high school students. We have a lot of them coming, I know, tomorrow. And just give them the tools and make them realize that the number one thing is to go out there, be yourself, have fun, and, you know, be able to advocate for yourself. there's a lot more to it, you know, honestly. I think just number one is just getting out there and talking to them. And being mentors, number one.
Great. Thank you, Sarah. I'm actually going to go to Pam Metz next. Is Edwin in the room?
Edwin?
Is there a volunteer?
I'm Rawash. I'm one of the volunteers.
Rawash, you come up here for a minute, would you? Sure. And Pam, go ahead.
Okay, good afternoon, you guys. I remember getting a phone call from Judy about 3 years ago and basically telling me I was going to run for the board. And I told her the only way I would do it is if she would mentor me on how to work with the board. And I was scared to death the first time I got elected to the board. But what I found out is they're friendly, and I have a voice. And I can use that voice to impact change with this organization. When I first joined CCB, I was like, I'm not going to get involved with all this. And now I'm so exhausted because I'm so involved with everything. I remember when they asked me to chair the Domestic Violence and Hate Crime Committee, now it's near and dear to my heart. And Kahlua is near and dear to my heart. And guide dog users are good, near and dear to my heart. But I have to say, the biggest mentor I have is Ken. He taught me patience with advocacy and how you can deal with advocacy. He taught me that it's important to self-advocate. But I've always been a self-advocate, but he's the one. And one of the things that I like to see bringing young people in mentoring is important. If we want the organization to grow, we have to start mentoring each other. And whether it's for the board or for different committees, we have to mentor each other. Okay, that's it.
Thank you, Pam. Yes. Question for Pam. Did I hear Roger with a question? So Roger has a question. Can someone take Roger a mic?
Hello, Pam. I think a lot of us have felt that there's been too little diversity, ethnic and racial diversity, in CCB, and some of us are very upset over the loss of the Compton chapter. Would you like to comment on what we need to do about fixing or replacing the Compton chapter and doing more with diversity?
Thank you, Roger. That's a good question. I actually work on the Multicultural Concerns Committee with the National, and so diversity is very important. Losing the Compton chapter was very hard because we don't have, honestly, this organization is not as diverse as it could be, We live in California. This is one of the most diverse states in this union, but we don't have enough diversity in here. I am willing to work and help rebuild the Compton chapter and see what we can do to rebuild the Compton chapter, but also I'm willing to work and see what we can do to rebuild the multicultural concerns within CCB. Because we have so many different cultures in this state, we have to find a way to welcome all of them in so that they can feel like they can come to us when they have problems.
Thank you. Another question for Pam?
It doesn't look like it.
Pam, you answered that one. I think so.
Oh, actually, there's one more.
Okay.
Hi, Kathy Schmidt-Whitaker. And Pam, I'd like to know, as a current board member, what do you think your greatest accomplishment has been as a board member? Or...
I think one of the accomplishments was you all know we had problems with the other organization, AMC, and the one thing that I would not allow them to use was the word racism. It wasn't that. It was compliance, bottom line, that's what it was. And I would not allow them to push us around and make us feel like we were doing something wrong. The other one, I've worked with Judy and Golden State. Okay, that's all I can remember, Guide Dog Handlers. Okay, Golden State Guide Dog Handlers, Inc., in getting us back on our feet and working with them as a board member and as a board member of GDU's, oh God, Golden State. And that was fun, hard work, but we did it. And I like the fact that I am involved, and they have invited me to be more involved. God bless them.
Thank you. Somebody seeks the floor? Yes?
I can speak Spanish quite well. I know Linda Hardwick personally.
What's your name?
Yolanda Escandon.
What's your last name, Yolanda?
Escandon, E-S-C-A-N-D-O-N.
E-S-C-A-N-D-O-N. P-O-N?
Yes.
D-O-N.
Yeah, Escandon.
Escandon.
Yes.
Okay.
I personally know Linda Hardwick.
You know what, Yolanda, I'm going to go on. I understand that, but believe me, we got your name.
Amen.
Thank you.
Okay, so... Linda Perrell.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is a great privilege for me to run once more to join the board of the California Council of the Blind. We live in a time of immense change. Change is all around us, increasing in speed and ferocity. Some would call that change disruption. I prefer to call it change because that is more hopeful stance to take. But that with that change, and we have change going on in CCB, brings an incredible sense of disruption in some quarters. Some folks, or many of us, are attached to familiar, long-time ways of doing things, of coping with the world, of deciding how we carry out our responsibilities to this organization. But we are at a point where we may need to make some pretty seismic shifts. So what I want to offer from being chosen to be on the board, if you will elect me, is a sense of calm, firm focus in making some of these, in helping to make some of these decisions. And I also want to be a listening ear for any quote-unquote subgroups or people that are unhappy with the speed or direction of the change so that we can knit together a strong fabric again for this organization as we move it forward. I've had lots of experience. I've been the president of San Francisco chapter for 3 terms. I joined the resolutions committee under the mentorship of Winifred Downing. And that's still my first love. I will be up as long as it takes tonight and tomorrow night. And I am currently the president of BRLC. We are in the process of reviving that affiliate. And I look forward to the opportunity to serve on the CCB board again. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Linda.
Looks like...
Whoa, some puppy got stepped on.
Is that someone's dog?
Is the puppy okay? It wasn't a dog? It was the PA? Oh, thank goodness. Okay, so question for Linda.
That was the microphone, unfortunately, but we have a question over here.
Hi, Linda. It's Richard Rutha. Question for you. I was going to ask it earlier to the other board members. What are some immediate tangibles or contributions you will bring to the board to help raise money so we're not just around in 18 months, we're around for another 180 years?
That's a wonderful question. I want to take a look at some of the plans that Paul is developing and see where I can best be used for financial development. We'll be happy to do that. I did work on the case for support. I was on that committee, did some of the interviewing of members of CCB. I think my skills can best be used in that writing and communication end of the fundraising process.
Another question for Linda? Thanks.
No, it doesn't look like we have any other questions. Or actually, we have one more here.
Hi, this is Kathy Schmidt-Whitaker.
Good for you,
and
Kathy.
Others need to be asking questions.
Yes.
2 per candidate. Linda, as a previous CCB board member, and you're wanting to become on the board again, I'm curious, what do you think that you've learned from being a previous CCB board member that will assist you if you're elected this time around as well?
Well, like Sarah, I'm going to say you gave me a fairly easy question. Thank you, Kathy. I think that the main lesson on being on the CCB board is to learn to value and appreciate the strengths and opinions of all of your fellow board members. And it's my goal to again seek to create an atmosphere of friendliness among board members. There was one to a good degree when I was on the board before, obviously that should continue if we're going to go forward, to get to know each other and value where we come from and what we have to offer.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for the questions.
We have another question here.
Nope, two is it. Robert, you're up. Robert went. Is somebody taking Robert a mic?
I'll be right over.
Roash, are you taking him a mic?
Robert didn't went. I've been thinking about this while everybody else was speaking, and I don't have very much to say now because other people said a lot of what I have to say, so I'm going to be a little redundant in relation to what others have said. One of my big thoughts is listening to folks. On my job, one of the things I do a lot of is I work at a university, and I'm always going back out and saying, let's ask students, let's talk to students, let's be aware of what students want. Sometimes it gets me in trouble. Sometimes, let's just make the decision and move on. I feel very strongly about listening to members, talking to members, hearing what members have to say, no matter what. I think it's important that we listen to folks. We may still make a decision that folks may not want us to make because we may have information or more information, but I think it's our obligation to listen to our members. This organization is made up of the members. I also believe that we are in a time when there's a critical amount of change coming. I think that change has a lot of potential positivity, and that's what I'm looking forward to is the some of the fundraising plans. I think having Paul provide some of the leadership with that we haven't, and I mean day-to-day leadership. It's hard when you're on a board to have the day-to-day leadership, so I think having him will help us. And I think it'll make it easier for us to be able to do the work that's necessary. I know that it's even energized me in terms of thinking about, okay, I can make commitments to do this, that, and the other thing, because I know that there will be a I don't know what you want to call Paul in this grand scheme of things. I guess there'll be a touch point that will always kind of be there on a daily basis. I also want to make certain that the organization stays alive. It's important to me. I think our presence is critical, and there's a lot of baby boomers losing vision now, so I think our existence is more important than ever.
Thank you, Robert. Question for Robert.
All right, we have a few questions.
Good afternoon, Robert. This is David Jackson. So it sounds as though Judy has is thinking of tasking chapter members to take on chapters, and as we know, there are chapters that are in perilous situations. So as a board member or a one that's seeking that position, how would you deal, how would you approach a chapter or chapters that you've been assigned and say one is having difficulty?
Well, I would start by listening, finding out what is actually going on with that chapter. I'm a counselor by training, and so starting out with what's going on, why is there an issue, what are the concerns of that chapter, and what in relationship to the greater organization, what's going on, and where is the common ground for resolution, and then also what can the organization do to help with the resolution of that problem, and then what can the organization, the chapter itself do? You know, it may be that the chapter needs some education, and sometimes that happens. You know, sometimes chapters grow too quickly, and they've never been big before, and they're just experiencing growing pains. So it depends on what's going on with the chapter. So you start with listening, and you go from there.
Another question?
Yeah, there's another question over here.
Good afternoon. Thank you for stepping up and running for the board. Much like the other questions regarding membership, promotion, diversity, those kind of things, how do you view the CCB board as making it relevant for people's time and promoting more advocacy and spreading the message of why we should have strong chapters and good communication with our communities that we live in? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Chris Fendrick at Bakersfield Chapter, President.
We need to kind of move it along. Yeah, I understand. So could you sit?
How would you promote more membership and make it relevant to people?
I think you have to start with what people need, what's going on out there, maybe starting with needs assessment and looking at what's out in the community. And I think we're starting to do that because of the grants and things. So we're starting to collect data. Linda mentioned it. And, you know, so the things we're doing, we're beginning to do that. And I suspect as part of that, we're going to probably discover information that we haven't known, or we'll discover information that will let us know that we have some false assumptions, which is great, because then it'll give us possibly new direction, and that's, you know, you can't do better than that. And then maybe to build in from that point on, you know, a checkpoint, just to say, like, every couple of years you come back to this and say, okay, where are we at? Is this still true? So that would be my thought. And then once you figure that out, you can begin to go back to the public or back out there and address those groups' needs so that you can attract, you know, members according to the need that's out there in the community.
Thank you, Robert. Somebody left earphones out in the hall. They're probably gone now. If you hear somebody left earphones, tell them they're at the registration desk.
Yeah, I have them with me. I'm taking them to registration right now.
Vivian, we're not, just because you're at the Y end of the alphabet, we're going to take you seriously here.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Vivian.
Prove to me that you're awake. Hello, everybody.
Okay.
All right, so what... All right, what was that? Well, listen, if I could just describe myself in one word, I'd like to see involvement. Involvement on every level. I believe in merging the top down with the grassroots level, and in the middle, that we're going to make a big difference, and I have a vision for us to be movers and shakers, not just within this organization, but with the world. You know, the words, in other words, your local communities, getting on commissions and boards and different things like that, because we have to be visible, we have to be viable, and we have to be, a vision. You know, we go into someone's office, this is who we are, this is what we'd like to do, and therefore, we'd love for you to ... you know, whether that's donate or whether that's to get someone involved and or educate them. So I'm currently the CCB membership committee chair, and I'm an out-of-the-box type of person. I believe in involving everybody that's around. So on our committee, for example, we're doing things differently this year. As you know, everybody got, I hope you guys read The Success to Win. Everybody remember that? The Success to Win. I don't know if your chapter's presidents, informed you about that. But part of the job of the membership chair and the committee is to assist chapters. And so we try to do that. There was one chapter in particular that we were able to not only speak with a person that was involved, but then she became a board member, committee member. So in the ways that I see this happening, first of all...
not too long, Vivian.
I know. I'm not 2 minutes yet, right?
I'd say you're getting very close.
Well, I'm going to give you one example, and that ties it all in.
Okay.
And what I'm going to say is that on the membership committee, wanting to get the whole agency involved. So there's going to be a mentor training coming up that our committee is going to be putting on for CCB. And I'll stop there.
Great. Thank you. And I'm sure you maybe get some questions here about your membership activities. A couple of questions for Vivian. Question? Go ahead, Andy.
I'd like to know your take on. I'd like to know your take on how we can make the organization relevant for everyone, and so that everyone in the organization can feel like the organization is their organization, and. You know, that they have skin in the game, that they have a vested interest in the organization, and that, you know, they should want to participate and want to be involved.
Okay, what I think we could do is to not get a committee together, but people from different aspects of this organization to get together and to make up a list of questions that we can put out there on everybody's lists in order to find out what their interests are, what their talents are, and how much time they have to devote. Based on that, then we can determine and approach them as to, we present them with, okay, this is where you come from, therefore, which of these would you be interested in doing? So it's about personal contact, media contact, and then also just be able to follow up. That's the key.
Another question for Vivian.
It doesn't look like we have any other questions. Or actually, there's one right here.
See? It always, when you don't think there's going to be one, then somebody comes up with one.
Hello, my name is Lorraine Theveny, and I was curious to know what membership activities do you have in mind?
Right now we have members at large, and everybody think, well, who's a member at large? So coming up, we want to reach out to that group of individuals who don't belong to a particular chapter and find out how they want to be involved in the organization. That's what's happening right there. Also, I'd like to provide a training in how to go to fairs and what to say to people as they pass by to nab them with with donations to help them think about someone that they know where we can touch their lives, to have business cards and a list readily available so that we can also go to various organizations for the blind. My passion is the newly blind. I'm a counselor right now with a nonprofit organization, and I believe that newly blind are happening in all ages, and I believe that that's a resource that we haven't tapped, and that would be my next goal after we finish the ones that are in store here.
Thank you. I would like to give an opportunity to anyone who plans to run from the floor to have 2 minutes to speak to us. Is there anybody in the room who plans to run from the floor that would like 2 minutes?
We have a gentleman over in here.
Sure. Hello, this is Steve Fort, and I tentatively plan to run for a second term, although I'm really impressed with the candidates that we've put up. And I'm really proud that as a longtime member of CCB, that we're an organization who has always adhered to democratic due process of decision making, and even though it takes a little bit more time making decisions this way, it's how you get to the whatever results that you're seeking. It's the means of getting there is as important as the results themselves. So I'm really proud to be a member of this organization, and that's basically my. I don't really need the full 2 minutes, but I'm happy to have served the last 2 years as a board member, and I thank everyone for all the support and the encouragement that you've given me.
Okay. For the people running from the floor, they'll have a chance this evening to present their speakers, but I do want to give anybody else who plans to run from the floor, and of course you can always run from the floor even if you don't take your 2 minutes, but I do think it's really good when people step up, and you know, it's hard to stand up in front of people and talk. Anyone else planning to run from the floor that would like 2 minutes? This gives us time to hear from our second vice president. We will finish this even if we move a couple minutes late into the next event.
Can you raise your hand?
This is the one being quiet. Wow, look at that. First time in all weekend I think I've been quiet. And I already heard Jeff booing at me. So. Hello, everybody. I am running for second vice president. Been around this organization for probably about 20 years now, since I was a student many years ago, and have been on the board previously, was board secretary for several years, and for a number of personal and health reasons needed to step away from the board. Last year, I was encouraged and agreed to run to fill the last year of Judy's term as second vice president. And in the last year, have really come to realize again how much I love this organization and why. You just look at some of the successes, as has been mentioned before, the case for support, and reading that and just seeing it in one area, how much the membership of this organization has accomplished, and just being with the around the people and working with people in this organization, and realizing how much that the members all have to offer. And so I would really appreciate your vote for running for second vice president again, and look forward to working with the other officers and members of the board of directors in carrying forward some of the plans that we've heard from Paul Shane about what he has planned, and being able to help with those, and also help to reach out to our membership and encourage more involvement and be able to help find a place for everybody. One thing I love about this organization is that I truly believe there is a place in CCB for everybody who wants to be involved at whatever level you want to be involved. And so I think we really need to encourage people to look and find what that area is, whether it's a committee, a local chapter, or a statewide affiliate, and to encourage them. So, thank you.
Okay, question for Gabe. Okay.
Oh, okay. I want to follow up on something that Linda referred to earlier, and others too, but especially her. And that is the issue of change. Gabe, I want to ask you what you think may be among the most difficult elements of change that this organization will need to face.
I'm sorry, you were asking what I think is the most difficult element? Okay. One of the biggest things, and I think we'll hear about it later this weekend in a resolution, is moving from a volunteer-based organization to a professional staff and having a CEO for the first time. We've always relied more on the volunteers, and I think we are still going to have to do that. But I think Paul, as our CEO, is really taking us in a direction that, as far as I've ever been involved with, we've never gone before. And so I think we, as an organization, are going to have to get behind those ideas and get used to a new way of thinking and be able to step up and support the ideas that he is bringing forth to us.
Another question for Gabe?
There's a few hands up, so I'll try to come to all of you guys.
Just pick one, Rosh. You don't know anybody, so it's going to be very neutral.
Hi, Gabe. It's Alice Turner here. I know that one of your passions is technology and having technology available and accessible to all. And if you had just one idea that you would like to put into place, it doesn't have to be even within this term, but just something that you would like to do for influencing that, I'd love to hear that.
Thank you. Well, it's one that we heard about a bit last night, and that is a result of a resolution that my friend Dave Jackson and I wrote a year ago, and that is being able to find a way for those who, for one reason or another, are not able to make it to convention to be able to participate remotely. As was said, we currently have the ability for members at home to listen through the ACB streaming, but there's not a way for those members to actively participate, be it do something like ask questions at a forum like this, or ultimately remote voting. And so I would really like for us in the coming years to find a way for people who are not able to physically make it to the convention to be able to remotely participate.
Thank you. And we now have Artis, our secretary, running for secretary.
Hello, I'm Artis Bazin. I've been a member of CCB for 18 years, since I moved from Iowa to California. And one of the things that I've always enjoyed about CCB is the fact that we can work together, and even though sometimes we don't always agree with one another, it's a good way to get our brains thinking in different directions than actually what we might have initially thought was the best way to go. And I think it's important for our organization to keep thinking that way, that we're open-minded and listen to everyone's thoughts, but then we ultimately have to make a decision as to which is the best way to go. And I think we need to really increase our involvement from the community, not only with fundraising, but just getting our name out there so that we're more well-known and that we can find those people who are losing their sight. I know it's important to get young people, but let's face it, most people losing their sight are older people. And every day I run into people that I didn't even realize they were legally blind, and we get into conversations. And I think we need to find those people and get them to understand how valuable it is to be part of this organization. And that's all I have to say right now.
That's fine. Thank you, Artis. Question for Artis?
I don't see any.
Artis is so great. Has served as our secretary. I don't think anybody wants to even
like
think about her not getting elected.
It looks like we have one question over here.
Okay.
In what way will you, as secretary, help to make the minutes of all board meetings available to the membership? And this is Christy Crespin.
Actually, they are available to all members. We do put a summary in the BC once the minutes have been approved. And I know it's a very brief summary, just the main points. But we also have them available in the office, and all anyone has to do is call the office and request copies of minutes. They are available to anyone upon request. And eventually we're going to be putting them on the website once the new website is up and running. So I encourage anyone to read the minutes, because I know it's hard to attend every board meeting. Even some of us miss one occasionally, so I know it's difficult. So please ask for the minutes.
Thank you, Artis. Any other questions? One last question for Artis. No, Raj?
No, it doesn't look like we have any.
Are our guests, Ms. Vicara, Vizgara and Dr. Guratian here? Yes. You here?
Can you raise your hand, please?
Yeah, could you come up? And could you tell me, please, how I massacred your name?
Actually, you got it right. I'm one of the only people who's ever gotten it correct.
Paratian?
Paratian.
Hey. You know, as an English teacher, I always really worked hard to get my students' names. And is Diana with you?
I haven't. Sure.
Is Diana with you?
No, I haven't seen her. She's supposed to be here.
Okay. Looks like you're going to have to. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this next presentation is so, it's going to be so interesting. It's advanced. Doctor, we're going to have to wait a minute.
Okay.
They want a door prize. Let's have a door prize. Let's have a door prize. Rosh, are you prepared to do that? So where's the box? This is the first time our volunteers have sort of had to do this, and they told me we were ready. the box of names, and what door prize are we going to give out first? Oh, you have to go get it? You have to go. Okay, wait a minute. We're going to do it, I promise, right after this presentation. She's got to go get stuff. I thought it was in the room. Okay, so advancing toward a brain stimulator to restore vision. And isn't that just, oh my goodness. So Diana Viscara has been working as a single case study directed by Dr. Nader Gurutian from the University of California, UCLA, at Los Angeles. And we welcome Dr. Gurutian today. And if Ms. Viscara shows up, we'll welcome her too. Doctor, thank you so much for coming.
Great. Thank you very much for the invitation. As she mentioned, my name is Nader Paradian, and I'm a neurosurgeon. And I'll tell you about what I do as a neurosurgeon. I'm what we call a functional neurosurgeon, which makes all my colleagues dysfunctional, but what it means is that the surgeries that I do focus on restoring function or improving the function of the patients that I operate on. So everyone thinks about brain surgery and they think of brain tumors and aneurysms and brain trauma, which are things that I deal with a little bit, but the primary focus of my clinical work is on using brain stimulators for patients with Parkinson's disease, because that's where we have the most knowledge and the most effective treatments. The brain stimulators that we use are like cardiac pacemakers, so like people who have abnormal rhythms of their heart, and they have a stimulator that goes to their heart to keep a normal rhythm. Instead, we place these stimulators that are designed for the brain into specific parts of the brain to restore a more normal pattern of activity for patients with Parkinson's disease. And there's actually FDA approval also for essential tremor, which is a different type of movement disorder, dystonia, which is yet another type of movement disorder, and of all things, the fourth indication that's been approved by the FDA is obsessive compulsive disorder, which we don't do too much of, but that is approved. So that's what I do. The goals in these surgeries are to try and make people function a little bit better. And I do research as well. I work at a university, and a lot of my research has to do with trying to understand how brain stimulation can be used to improve that function, understanding how it works in Parkinson's disease, but also applying it to other diseases. And one day I was sitting in my office and I got a call from an old colleague of mine. So in addition to going to medical school, I did a PhD. And someone from my PhD class gave me a call and she said, you know, I'm working at a company called Second Sight. Has anyone here heard of Second Sight? Okay, great. So Second Sight is the company behind all this. And as you know, they've worked on the retinal prosthesis and that has FDA approval for...
Could we have...
Has FDA approval for a specific indication, but they called and they said, you know, we've figured out the retinal prosthesis, and obviously they're still working on improving that, but we're interested in looking at the brain, and can we stimulate the brain to restore vision for people who might not be candidates for retinal prostheses? And it was really exciting, because no one in neurosurgery is really thinking about this, although there has been a little bit of work, and I'll tell you about that in a moment. But I said, you know, that would be great. And so a little bit of a personal touch. That was before I had my third child, and my third child, we discovered at the age of 6 months, has ocular albinism, oculocutaneous albinism, and he's doing quite well, but it gave me all the more motivation to work on something for those with poor vision or no vision. So the work has come a long way, and What we've done is, with Second Sight, adapted the technology that they had for the retinal prosthesis, but it's designed so that instead of delivering stimulation to the retina now, it delivers stimulation to the brain, and it requires brain surgery. There's a lot of work that goes into figuring out how to design a new brain stimulator. We spent a long time in the laboratory with cadavers, trying to figure out the right design, getting it to fit correctly. We've done extensive animal studies to assess, you know, how biocompatible the device is, how well the brain tolerates this kind of device. But the one piece of information we didn't really have was, how well is this going to work? You know, after we put a device in, what kind of vision can we get, or what kind of visual perceptions can we get? How consistent is it? How well tolerated is it? What are the side effects of this type of stimulation? And so we looked back at the history a little bit, and there's two researchers, Dobell and Brindley, who've done this type of work in the past and done brain stimulators, but where the electrodes actually stuck out of the head, and so there were wires coming out of people's heads, and they lived like that for a long time. But a lot of that work was unfortunately lost as the investigators actually passed away unexpectedly, and the research just completely stopped, and no one has really revisited it. And so what we did is, there are other brain stimulators on the market also, besides deep brain stimulators, and we decided that the best way to learn is to actually try this on a volunteer. And it was there's another device that's used for epilepsy, for stimulating the brain for patients with epilepsy to try and control epilepsy. It's already FDA approved. And we decided that we would try to implant this device over the parts of the brain that are involved in human vision, what we call the primary visual cortex, and see what we could get. So this was a pure science experiment. We didn't have a device that actually has a camera or can sense the world or can stimulate the brain based on what it sees through the camera, but we wanted to see if we could stimulate the brain in a consistent manner and have someone see something in it in a very reliable way. And I see Diana in the back, so she'll come up, and I'm just about to start talking about her. So we decided we were going to implant up to 5 subjects, and a little bit about Diana. Do you want to come to the front?
Come on up.
And we looked long and hard, because it's not something that everyone or anyone wanted to really run. Actually, we had a lot of people who wanted to do it, but we needed to find the right person to do this, because there was no therapeutic intent here. We weren't trying to do this to give vision back in this first scenario. What we were trying to do was understand how well we can stimulate the brain. And I think Diana was one of the first people I spoke to, and for whatever reason, and I can't remember, and clearly I was wrong, I disqualified her. And she wrote to me about 6 weeks afterwards and said, "You're wrong, I'm the right person, and you're going to operate on me." And that's what we did. So she underwent a surgery that was about 5 or 6 hours long. And I'm going to let her tell you about why she did it. But we implanted a device. The electrodes are inside of her brain, on top of her brain on the inside. And the device is implanted in her skull. And it's completely under the skin. We can communicate with it with a wand, basically, that communicates through the skin. And she has selflessly been coming to UCLA once a week since her implant about 8 months ago, where we turn the device on and we do all kinds of manipulations to answer the questions that we need to know to be able to go through our next to the next step of doing a true clinical trial with the device that's approved. So I'm going to take a little break and let Diana speak a little bit about her experience, you know, why she did this and what brought her to this point and how the clinical trial has been affecting her. Is the microphone right?
Hello, everyone. Sorry I'm late. had to drive from Orange County.
I told you she's selfless.
My name is Diana Viscara. I'm 31 years old. I'm going to give a little bit of my history, why, you know, how I lost my vision, so everyone has a little understanding about that. When I was 21, I was diagnosed with a rare autoimmune, Voigt-Koyanagi-Harada syndrome. There's a lot of adverse side effects with that autoimmune. And 1.5 years after I was diagnosed, I woke up. I had suffered closure angle glaucoma, which pretty much took my vision overnight. And that was the day I realized that, okay, we can't always prepare for everything. Things happen suddenly, and I had to adapt to that. Ever since then, I've had multiple surgeries. I've done many things. I've been very proactive. I've changed my diet, just hoping that I would get my vision back. And I think many can relate to that. Then about a year ago, this time, one of my fiance's friends sent me a number. He didn't tell me what it was for. He just said, call this number. It's going to help you. So I called, and I remember the lady said, what's the reason for your call? And I said, I don't know. I'm blind. All I know is that I'm supposed to call this number. And she put me on hold, and she said, let me figure that out because we have a lot of case studies going on. And then I left my information, and Dr. Paradian called me 2 days later, and he told you the story that he declined me. And I was like, no. I'm like, how am I going to convince a UCLA neurologist? But we all know the results of that. And since then, I went through the surgery. I mean, before the surgery, there was things that had to be done to pre-qualify me. I had to see a psychologist, right? I had to do a neurocognitive test and MRI and a couple other tests. And then right after that, I was in the hospital ready for surgery. And I remember the day that I was at the hospital, I was laying in bed, or on the hospital bed, and the anesthesiologist was preparing the needle, the IV, and a nurse came in, and the nurse said, well, are we shaving all of your hair or half of your hair? And for I have very thick hair, and it's all the way down to my belly button, so you all may think like, okay, how are you going to tell me this right before surgery? And my fiance was the one that was panicking, and then the anesthesiologist started giving me this stuff that was making me feel good. So at that point, I'm like, I don't really care. I feel good. It doesn't really matter at this point. And my fiance is like, what? What do you mean? I'm like, the new styles, being like having no hair, it's okay. Women are shaving their hair off, so it's okay. And he's like, no, it's not okay. So then we did the surgery. I woke up, and it wasn't as bad as I thought. I really thought that I was going to feel ill, but I didn't. I just woke up, easy transition. I had like a wrapping over my head, so I wasn't able to touch anything, but I did feel two pigtails coming out in the bottom. I said, okay, my hair's still intact. And yeah, it was 2.5 days in the hospital. Obviously, the medication was more of the irritation. I don't, being blind, I rely on my senses. So if you take any type of painkiller, it doesn't really go well with trying to focus on sounds and what's going on in your environment. So I think that was the most difficult part. And then we took off the dressing, the wrapping, and the stitches came out. It was an incision on the back right of my head. Dr. Pradian did an excellent job, only shaving like a little thin area. So you can't even notice it, which I was really happy about. Then we started the therapy sessions, which was, I don't think anyone was no one knew what exactly was going to happen. So that was a little frightening. And we started the sessions. And the first day, I saw multiple colors. And then I started seeing shapes, circles and lines. And then I was already ready to, like, ramp it up. Everyone's like, no, we have to take steps. I'm like, no, turn all of them on. I want to see more of this. We did it slowly, week after week. We went through different settings. It's really important to gather information, understand what I've been told. It's crucial to understand how the visual cortex works and how the device is working with the visual cortex. The only bad experience I had in one of the sessions was when the duration of the stimulation, think about like seconds or less than a second. So one day someone thought, okay, let's do it for 10 seconds. Let's see what happens. And I felt like I was on drugs. Like everything was just moving around and I couldn't figure out if I was standing or if I was on the roof. I was all over the place. And then they're like, okay, I think we took too many steps forward. Let's go back. They started working on different settings, and I'm just ready for the next device. I think we've done a lot of research for this, and now the reason why I thought about this question, I'm like, okay, I know I'm a daredevil, and I tend to put myself in situations that later I regret, but I thought about this question, why did I do this? And the day that I thought about this, I was on YouTube and I heard about the story of, I think it's Louis Braille. I may not be saying his first name right, but the man who created the, and I heard his story for the first time. I never knew exactly anything about him. And it, you know, he was 3 when he lost his vision. Then he ended up going to a blind school for the first time. And his expectations were to learn how to read and write. And nothing was there for him. They were, on the contrary, they had them, all the blind people, working in a factory. And so he was dedicated to create something, and he did. I mean, we all know what he created, and it's been impactful. And he died about a year after his creation. And for me, I think that I believe that we're at the right time of something powerful that can help the blind see again and for others see for the first time. And I think that sometimes we think of our destination instead of the journey, and it's more about the journey, not about the destination. And if there's something that I can do that I believe will eventually help others, not only here, but in other countries where they don't have programs like we do and organizations that represent us, then I did my part. Even if it's something I'm not going to be able to cherish. Just like Louis, he never was able to cherish his creation. And I think that life is about that. It's about doing as much as you can to give back, knowing that it's going to have a ripple effect. So that's the reason.
Can I add just two
more? Certainly, and then I'm sure we're going to have several questions. Yeah.
So. Just 2 minutes. So just 2 more minutes of comments, and we'll take questions. Just an observation about the first time we turned on Diana's simulator, there were a lot of people in the room because we were all very excited, and we were excited, you know, there's 8 stimulators or 8 contacts on her brain, and we were extremely excited that all 8 produced some kind of visual perception, which we weren't sure what we were going to get. The other very interesting thing is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Diana, most of what she sees is black and white or shades of gray, except for some things that are color. And I think the color was particularly emotionally stimulating or evoked a lot of emotions because it had a lot more meaning than just black or white. And, you know, the difficult thing that I'm going to take the words from your mouth was, I think it was a little bit jarring at first, right? Because it was the first time you'd seen something like that in, you know, 10 years or so, 9 or 10 years. And I remember you saying that the thing that you feared most was that you have something back and that you would lose it again. And so I think, you know, comments like that are really what motivate us to keep going forward to do this type of research. Couple things about where we're headed with all this. Who is a candidate for this type of work? It's people with no or bare light perception. So people who can still see or make things out with some kind of enhancement, unfortunately, are not the type of people that we're at least initially targeting with this type of therapy because we're superimposing a new perception on top of what your eyes may already be delivering to your brain. The other thing is, we've had a lot of conversations on the backside between myself and Second Sight in terms of what our goals are. And the goals are not really to restore vision the way that a normally sighted person might see things. But if we can restore something to the extent that people can perceive, for example, doorways or walkways or faces or people walking towards them or edges, even that we feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, would restore some level of independence or sense of functionality to patients like you who are blind, and we think that's going to be worthwhile. It's a big, big challenge ahead of us to figure out how to stimulate to make this all meaningful, but that's the challenge that we've accepted and we're moving forward with.
Wonderful. Okay, let's have some questions. Don't all stand up at once. Steve, I hear you.
Okay. Hi, this is a question.
Wait a minute, Dave. Steve was first.
This is right here. There's a lot of questions. 15.
And then David, and then...
Dr. Prati and Diana, thank you very much. This is certainly very exciting. I'm curious, though, to ask, even among those who have the very, very limited degree of vision that you suggest or no vision at all, there are many different causes of their blindness. And I'm wondering from the diagnostic standpoint, which of the more prevalent causes do you expect would be particularly responsive to brain stimulation as a technique for restoring some residual vision, and which, because they involve issues of the lens of the eye, the optic nerve, et cetera, might not respond so well to brain stimulation?
This is a good question. The people who will respond, or the criteria for the trial, once the trial goes live, is going to be people who are previously sighted, because your brain needs to have seen something to be able to develop properly to process visual input. So being previously sighted is important. The cause of blindness also has to be non-cortical or non-brain-based. So it has to be something in the optic nerves, chiasm, tract, or in front of that. So retina, globe, lens, cataract, or whatever, what have you. Anything anterior or before the brain. The only exclusion criteria is if you are a candidate for a retinal prosthesis, then you should have the retinal prosthesis because that's probably going to be more effective than a brain stimulator.
David, you were next.
So this is a question for the doctor. So we're talking about stimulating the visual cortex. So how far can the technology go? I guess what you're saying is that you're still putting something fairly large on top of the brain. How much smaller will that technology have to be in order for the stimulation to really be activated?
So there's different strategies about how to do this. And again, with Second Sight, we've gone through all these different strategies. In terms of the implant that goes on the brain, I don't think we're going to get smaller than what we have right now because we want that coverage over the brain. There's another strategy from another group in Chicago that wants to put multiple what we call penetrating arrays throughout the visual cortices, which would be smaller but entering into the brain as opposed to what we're doing, which is placing it on top of the brain. So I actually think what Second Sight has designed and is planning to use in trials is pretty slick. So I don't think it's going to be miniaturized too much smaller. It's pretty small as it is.
Somebody else has a question?
Yeah, there's a lot.
Hello, I'm Mary Lou Baracco from Chatsworth, Ohio, California. I have a question for the doctor. If a patient needs to have an MRI or a CT scan, can they have one? Or that's not going to work because these implants?
So the device that has been designed, that is, again, not yet in clinical trials, is designed to be MRI compatible, but it will not have MR compatibility labeling by the FDA when it initially undergoes trials. So officially, you cannot have an MRI once you're implanted, but you can have a CT scan. The thought is once things get approved and it gets along, then they'll do testing to prove the MR compatibility so you can actually get an MRI with it in your head.
We can't take all the questions, but we can take a couple more.
Hi, this is Sarah Harris. How would someone contact you to possibly one day be part of this clinical trial?
Good question. So I knew I was going to forget it, but I'm very findable on the UCLA website. If you go to UCLA Neurosurgery, I'm listed there and my email is there. So I get emails now two or three times a week from people around the country and around the world asking to participate in the trial. So there's been a little bit of press coverage, so people are out there contacting me.
Who's got the mic?
There's three more, one back there.
I think we can take those three.
Karen Memmer here. When I hear neurology, I think of mitochondrial disease. When I hear of autoimmune disease and glaucoma, I don't relate them. I've never heard of glaucoma being caused by an autoimmune disease. Can you explain how this happened? And is there a concern for her immune system to attack what you've put into her?
That's a good question. So autoimmune disease, and I don't know all the answers because I'm not
a... steroids that cause the glaucoma.
Well, why don't you answer it since you know your history much better than that.
Well, the first part, the VKH caused irritation and inflammation in my eyes, and I was given a high dose of prednisone, 60 milligrams in combination with Celcept, which is an autoimmune suppressant. And I never suffered with pressure in my eyes, but somehow the prednisone, the side effect of prednisone is glaucoma. So the medication that I was given to tackle the inflammation in my eyes caused me to lose my vision, I guess. I'm not sure what that is.
Stephen Johnson's is it's different. That's a drug reaction. Stephen Johnson is a drug reaction.
Okay, let's. There were a couple of other questions.
We have two more after this one.
Hello, Dr. Pirotian. First, I have to ask you on behalf of my wife, my partner right here, Bernice Kandarian, whether you're Armenian.
No.
But
Persian.
What I really am interested in is, you know, you always guys always talk about having had to see before, and that's probably has some value, but I think it's overrated. And I'd like to recommend that you consider at some point using bilaterally enucleated retinoblastoma people, who have, you know, they're very smart You may have heard that. I'm not one, by the way, but I have a lot of good friends who are.
So is the question, have I heard of bilateral retinoblastomas?
What do you think about them as being possible candidates?
Usually, it depends on what age it occurs at. And there's even something called trilateral retinoblastomas. If the reason why you need to be previously sighted, I'll give you a little bit of a science lesson that we learned from cats long before I entered the world of science. You need to be exposed to the visual world for the brain to develop visually. And we know that because they took cats and they put them from birth in a room that only had vertical lines. And it turns out they only learned to see vertical lines. They would put them on tables and they'd walk off the edge of the table because they never learned to perceive the horizontal. So we know that our vision, our brain only develops in response to the visual stimulation that comes through our optic nerve. So if you're never sighted, the brain will not have developed vision, and so we don't think we're going to be able to stimulate the brain to evoke a visual perception. At least that's where we're starting. You know, in device development, we need to go for where the most likely path to getting a successful outcome, and then once we're successful with that, we might be able to branch out and address other diseases as well.
I think this next is going to have to be the last question.
Sorry.
Thank you. My name is Charles Navarrete, and I contracted VKH in 1965. And even though I had the same type of treatment as Ms. Mascara, eventually the inflammation essentially destroyed my retina and my optic nerve. So I don't understand how the things you're doing could help someone like me, since there's no way to send the signals from my eyes to the brain.
So that's a good question, just to finish, to make sure everyone understand what happens. So normally, to see, light has to go through the cornea, through the lens, to the back of the globe, to the retina, and then the retina converts those signals that get transmitted through the optic nerve, through the thalamus, and then from the thalamus back to the cortex. What we are doing with brain stimulation is bypassing all of that and saying, you know, if you can't get vision back to the brain through that entire pathway, we're completely going to bypass it and send the signals directly to the brain through this stimulator. So the entire device, just to be clear, has glasses that have a video camera on it. The video camera connects to what they call a video processing unit. The video processing unit then transmits signals to the brain stimulator to directly stimulate the brain. So your eyes never have to see anything. Your optic nerves never need to transmit any signals. Your thalamus, which is another part of the brain, never has to convert those signals to send new signals to the back of the brain. We are completely bypassing all of the optic pathway and going directly to the brain. That's the real innovation. Absolutely, yes. So we think that part of the patient population we're going to be treating could be, for example, patients with trauma who've lost eyes due to trauma and who might have had reconstructive surgery and prostheses, and you might have prostheses for other reasons as well.
We have to stop the questions at this point. It's so tempting to. We could go on for another hour, but we're going to have to stop now. And we want to thank you so much. But before you leave, Doctor, I want you to come over and take a name out of this box. We are going to have a door prize. The first door prize is a basket that's got a blue diamond. Jeff and Leslie Tom donated this. So could you read the name, Doctor?
Eugene Lozano Jr.
Is Gene in the room? Hey.
I'm coming.
Okay. We'll get it to you, Gene. Okay. Now we have 25 buckaroos from Bayview Chapter. And Diana, you know, I'm going to send this over to you and let you pick it. I'm going to smash you in the face. I'm afraid.
reach in there and pick out a name.
Charles Navarrete.
He just asked a question. Yep. And the $25 is for Charles Navarrete. Charles, raise your hand.
I'll be right there in a minute.
Okay. Could Ken Metz, are you back in the room?
I'm coming up.
Okay, and this is such a privilege. I'm going to come out in a minute. We have an honored guest with us at this time, and it's Senator Fran Pavli. Fran Pavli served in the California legislature for 14 years from 2000 to 2006 in the Assembly and from 2008 to 2016 in the Senate. But even more important, before that, she was a teacher and the first mayor of Agoura Hills. Where is Agoura Hills, Senator? You'll have to tell us when you come up. So if the Senator would come up and if Ken Metz would come up, we have a presentation, and we would like to hear from the senator for a few minutes. And then I'll just say that at the end of the session, we'd like the officers of the guide dog users, I mean Golden State guide dog handlers, and the CCB officers to come up for photo ops. So, Senator, welcome. Whoops. Come on up. Okay, Ken, we're going to go back in front of the table.
Oh, okay. Is
Margie
here?
Is Margie Donovan here? I don't think so.
No.
I asked her if she was coming, and she said she was. Thank you again.
Well, I want to thank Jeff Tom for inviting me here today. We had a great year up in Sacramento, very successful in passing Senate Bill 1331. And I'm not sure if any of you were there. Did any of you testify at one of those hearings, come all the way to Sacramento? I can't tell you what a great job you did. Articulate, to the point, you obviously studied everything about the bill, gave personal stories, and the members of the committees in both the Assembly and the Senate who voted the bill out, I think unanimously each time, we're so impressed, and so was I. And of course, I have to admit it, as a former guide dog puppy raiser, the stars of the show were the guide dogs that accompanied everyone up to the building. I have some wonderful pictures of that. So a little background on why I got involved with guide dogs and passionate about helping people that are visually impaired is... my kids were looking for a 4-H project. I live out in Agoura Hills, and Mary, it's about 15 miles west. Agoura Hills is at the far end of the San Fernando Valley, almost on the Ventura County line, sort of up close to the Santa Monica Mountains, along the 101 freeway area. So we got engaged with 4-H, and luckily I live in an area that didn't allow cows or horses or swine, but the 4-H chapter said guide dogs are a project you can do with our chapter. And so we started down that road, and for those of you who have raised guide dog puppies, and this is all from Guide Dogs from the Blind, Keith at San Rafael, they came down and they told me they were going to do a house inspection first to see if we qualified. I cleaned everything. Everything inside. Well, no one told me what they were going to be looking for, so you know. And so everything's dusted, everything's perfect. Yes, it was. Actually, they were looking to see if you had a fence outside and some of those basics, so cleaning the whole house was not the point. But we had a wonderful experience raising a guide dog. I think my daughter was about 10 or 11, a perfect age to get children thinking about other things more than themselves. She loved raising her dog, and actually the dog made it, went through graduation ceremonies. We went up to San Rafael, and those of you who participate in those ceremonies, they are amazing, where you, the child physically hands over the dog to the person that's going to be their new owner. And I think one thing that was so especially exciting about it, this woman who had my daughter Jenny's dog, kept in touch with her for many, many years, and that made a real difference in her life. But here's the problem with raising a guide dog puppy. They leave, right? Right about 1.5 years old. Then you think you want another one. So fast forward, 4 guide dog puppies later, we went through 4. Half about made it, half needed what I now know is called a career change. You can't say flunked out of guide dog school. I've been corrected enough. Career change. One of those that needed a career change ended up coming back to us. The other one did not. And today, here I was up in the assembly, and I was carrying a bill for Council of the Blind. I have to look up the number. I was looking it up. It was 12 years ago. I contacted Council of the Blind to see if they needed any help, and it was on stiffening penalties for attacks on guide dogs or their owners, and increasing the penalties, and also allowing the court to decide with additional money should be awarded to the person for vet bills and other costs. And so being in the legislature, I was able sort of to help out in that way. But while in the assembly, someone from, I think, Guide Dogs for the Blind said, you know, you can adopt a dog that needed a career change, I'll put it that way, needed a career change. And so we got a dog about 2 years old or 1.5 years old, needed a career change. You can donate some money to Guide Dogs for the Blind, and you get this dog back home. Well, boy, did she need a career change. She had some medical issues like restricted esophagus and other things, so raised table. And I know that, you know, medical problems are a real problem for anyone to take care of them normally, and especially if you're not able to physically see what is going on and react to that timely manner. But I think what she really lacked is she had selective listening. She sometimes would listen to you, and more often than not, just pretend she never heard you. And I can't imagine what a dog like that would be if no voice commands would work. She also was semi-partial to chasing cats. And my husband and I were both middle school teachers. I taught for 29 years, and he taught for 32 years. And one day at home, she got bored and chewed up the couch. So, where's Guide Dogs for the Blind? Keith, this dog we've had for now 14 years. She turns 15 in a month. Stubborn as ever, but is happy and healthy. And so it's been a real pleasure, you know, having a guide dog that needed a career change and taking care of it at home, because it reminds us of all the puppies that we had. We also had one guide dog puppy, second one that made it. His name was King. And interestingly enough, the person who spent all the time training King was my son, David. And what's very interesting about David, he's autistic. That's actually a good match. They're very focused on doing everything right. Scheduling, you tell him what the rules are, follows it up at a certain time, and he still treasures those memories today and always talks about King. Well, King needed to retire about age 7 or 8 because it was harder and harder for him to spend a long time on hardwood floors all the time. And so we got a call, and they said, would you like King to come retire at your home? So we had King for 5 years after that, and he was the best trained dog in the world, and we loved having King in our life for a return visit. So you can see why my 14 years in the legislature, I ended up having my staff reach out and see if there's anything that Guide Dogs for the Blind or the California Council of the Blind needed as far as legislation. So fast forward to about 1.5 years ago, we called, and I think probably called Jeff, and asked what were some issues on their plate. We thought they would be minor little problems, little tweaks. I assured my staff that this wouldn't take up any time at all. We had some other things going on, too. This would be fun, and I love guide dogs. It would be a great way to end my career. That bill, I guess when you try to interact sometimes with the state board and you want to change things and you think they're reforms, but they don't think so, it gets challenging, to say the least. So we had many, many meetings. I participated in some in my office. Sometimes they were contentious. But what this bill did, and Jeff can talk about it as well, is to me simple kinds of things that needed to be fixed. If all graduates now from guide dog school, the owners would get a fact sheet that they would have all the information on what are the roles and responsibilities of the state board guide dogs, what options do they have for you, what are your responsibilities. That made sense to me. And what I didn't realize, the makeup of the state council, the state board for guide dogs, only two of the seven members actually were people that had guide dogs. They were had been associated with guide dogs and they were a user and really aware of the challenges of having a guide dog and some of the things they're exposed to. So now, instead of two members of the seven members, it's three members and a little stronger voice, and that would be a minimum of three members. And then the hardest part of it all was the discussion that we had on, not sure how to phrase this, when you come into California, or whether your dog was trained in an out-of-state facility, on whether they had the proper licenses. In California, both the person who trains the guide dogs and the three schools in California, they're required to be licensed, both of them. The rest of the states, it's just the facility, it's just the school. There's 11 other schools around the country. And if there was ever a problem, and let's say you moved or in California, but your dog was trained and you were trained with the dog outside of the state, and there was a problem, an accident, or some unexpected problem, wouldn't it be best for the person who knew, who trained your dog, who had a relationship with you, to come in and offer some advice, not really training, but some follow-up services if needed for that continuum of care? And that was a complicated discussion. We worked it out. Compromises were made. Amendments were taken in the bill. And at the end of the day, the governor signed it, and it had unanimous support on the floor of both the Assembly and the Senate. That's fine. So it was a great experience. So I'm thrilled to be here. Jeff wrote that I would be happy because guide dogs would be in the room, and that they are, and I've noticed that. I've seen more labs these days. I've noticed that, too. And so thank you very much for allowing me to come by and just thank all of you and say good job from last year. And you need to think about seriously becoming effective lobbyists in Sacramento. You did an amazing job, and we're impressed everyone up there. Thank you very much.
Your freedom pace. I could do that. It might even. I'll give it to you in a second. Hold on one. I'll give it to you so you can read it. But oh, yeah, a little bit. No, you're here. You're here. Hold on before you read it, though. Hold on. Hi, Senator. Remember, my wife and I were in your offices. That's right.
Senator, it's just a tremendous pleasure for us to have known you while you were in the legislature. I know the work you did, what was it, 12 years ago? I was up there on the Capitol steps when you did that. And I believe one of our former guide dog members, Shirley Manning, was the one that had spoken to you. And then several of us have been working with you. Big thanks, of course, goes from our organization to Jeff Tom and Margie Donovan. And then you were so kind and gave us, goodness, about a half hour in your office. And I know you had so much to do, and I think most of your appointments are probably a lot less than that. But we certainly appreciated it. It's so nice to have a friend in the legislature that actually understands. Sometimes we get people to help us out. They'll sponsor bills. They'll vote and help us, but they don't get it. Senator Pavley was a puppy raiser. What a difference that makes when she really knew what the subject was all about. Senator, with that, we have a presentation of a plaque for you, and we're going to have it read first.
It's a wooden plaque with a, it's written on a gold, I don't know, what do you call it, label on the front. And it's bronzy gold, yeah. But it says, California Council of the Blind Legislator of the Year Award to the Honorable State Senator Fran Pavley, who represented the 27th Senate District in portions of Los Angeles and Ventura counties. Senator Pavley worked tirelessly on a variety of cutting-edge issues, such as climate change, but she also found time to sponsor AB 1801 in 2004, which expanded the law regarding criminal interface with the use of a guide dog and included unlawful intentional interference with mobility aids. A former guide dog puppy raiser herself, Senator Pavley in 2016 authorized SB 1331 on behalf of the California Council of the Blind, which adopted various reforms to the laws pertaining to the California Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind. Presented this seventh day of April 2017 in the city of Woodland Hills, California.
It's there, it'll protect it. And with that, Senator, again, from all of us, from the bottom of our hearts, to every dog's leash, paw, and body, every guide dog that has made it, and those that have been career changed, we thank you so kindly.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm actually president currently of the Golden State Guide Dog Handlers, Inc., and so it's just a great privilege.